Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL podcast, your Tuesday edition of the show, mostly covering the East and the North divisions in the NHL. Joe DiBiase here from Locked On Sabres, joined as always by Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. You've heard us talk about it on the podcast before. We don't live that too far away from each other. So, Mike, I don't know if you've seen it, but we've got snow in the forecast for Wednesday.
Oh, my God. I did. And luckily, I was legitimately last week, I was thinking to myself, I got to switch over my tires here and get the, you know, get the winters off. And then I actually saw that there was snow in the upcoming forecast. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's going to be May in like a week and a half. And we got snow now. Like, oh, God.
We just put fuel stabilizer in the snowblower. Not that I would be stunned if we would need to use the snowblower if there was enough snow for that.
Dude, y'all in Buffalo, you never know, man.
Yeah,
we might go in Buffalo.
We might be breaking out the shovels at the very least. And it's like you said, it's a week away from May. It's insane. I've already golfed twice this year. And I don't think there's ever been snow after I've golfed. But
it must be nice, Joe, because we cannot golf here in Ontario. It is banned. We are restricted from golfing.
I want to just go off right now, but there's no time. but yeah, that what? I don't even live there and it upsets me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of upset Ontarians of the way that things have been dealt recently, but let's not dwell on that. Let's get to the hockey content.
We've got good stuff today. The Canucks are back and they're already interesting. So we've got to go over what's going on in Vancouver, the situation that they're even back on the ice in the first place, and then what's happened since they've been on the ice, a suspension for Alex Edler, an update in Montreal. Carey Price is injured. We'll talk about what that could mean for the Canadiens should he miss time. And then we'll start, though, with the big story in the NHL, and how could it not be? Patrick Marleau passes Gordie Howe for the most games played in NHL history, 1,768. I don't want to dwell on it too much because the accomplishment is incredible. The guy is amazing. But how, did you see the custom gloves that were made for Marleau going into the game? There's two problems. There's not really a third. If you wanted to be cute about it, you could say there's a third. The big two problems are, one, the Leafs logo is the wrong logo. He didn't, unless I'm wrong, I'm 99% sure. I looked at their logo history. It's the what I think of as like the Dion Phaneuf, Phil Kessel, Matt Sundin Leafs logo that was on the gloves. And I'm 99% sure Marleau never wore that logo. You tell me if I'm wrong there. Maybe I missed his first season was that. But I thought that was interesting. And then the bigger one that everyone was seeing was it said his 1,768th games. So you had a grammar issue on the gloves as well. So bad job by whoever made those gloves. The Hurricanes were also not on there. That I was fine with. I mean, he was only there as a paper transaction.
But. Yeah, I made that joke myself saying, wow, yeah. they couldn't fit the Hurricanes went on there, huh? But when it comes to the Maple Leafs logo, I mean, I think that's like a universally known logo. Like, I don't have an issue with that. That's used quite often. So that one I think is just a little nitpicky, but the grammatical error there, that's kind of embarrassing for whoever put these gloves together. Like, either ditch the S at the end or ditch the TH, but they don't go together. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So Marleau is a player. I think you saw some people, I mean, I don't want to dwell into it too much, that were kind of diminishing his accomplishment by bringing up his career. And, like, you know, there is, I guess, when the Hall of Fame comes up for him, there might be some pushback in that, you know, as a first ballot guy. I think it's hard to be a first ballot in my mind when you were never the best player or even considered the best player in the world. I'm not sure Marleau was that, but he has been an incredible player for an incredibly long period of time. And it's not like, you know, it's not like he was some third, fourth line guy that played this long. He wasn't, you know, some journeyman like Lee Stepniak, for instance, like getting to this many games. Like, he's been an all-star level player forever. And like, I was 2 years old when he entered the NHL. I've got a hockey card of, I don't think it's his rookie card. It's him as a rookie, but I don't think it's considered his rookie card. It's Marlo wearing roller skates at the beach. And he's like 18 years old. He looks like a completely different person. And it's like that guy in that hockey card that was in my mind that like I had when I was five is still playing hockey. So I think it's an incredible accomplishment by Marlo. And it's a record that's going to be hard to beat because it's so many games.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's incredible. Like, you play 1,768 games and counting in the NHL. Like, that is an all-time record. And I know, like, the cynical people out there are saying, like, well, I mean, technically, Gordie Howe played more professional hockey games. He just played the WHA before the NHL and yada, yada, yada. So you can tack on an extra 400 to, like, his pro hockey career. But this is an NHL record, not a pro hockey record. So you can take that that argument and shove it. But still, like, the guy, and then also saying, like, Patrick Marleau, his name doesn't belong in the conversation of the Gordie Howes of the world and, you know, these players who shaped the game and really grew the game into what it is today. And yeah, I mean, I guess that may be true. Like, is Patrick Marleau as important to hockey as Gordie Howe? No, I guess not. But the guy still is going to finish his career with over 1,200 points. Like, that's nothing to snuff at.
Right. 1,200 points. I mean, holy cow. I mean, yeah, not a point a game, like, even how. But, I mean, I said it. Like, he was maybe never a superstar and never the best player in the world, but all-star level player for a long time. Thornton, by the way, I should have mentioned him. I guess he could break the record if Marleau were to retire this year and Thornton were to play a year or two more. I haven't watched enough of him this year, though. Does he look like a guy that's got two more years left to you?
Not if he's, like, definitely not at a high level. I mean, as a charity case, maybe. But I don't think he's going to be, you know, someone that teams are going to be looking to add. It's kind of like Jágr in his, like, final years where he just wasn't really what he used to be. And you could tell. And, you know, he has his spurts and he had his moments early on in the season. He had, like, a couple of, you know, really good games. And then lately it's been a dud. I think he's gone like 23 games or something like that without a goal. So yeah, Thornton's not, he's definitely coming to an end, but he did say, I don't know if he was just being cheeky, but he did say that he has interest in passing Marleau here. So he's what, but he's 199 games back of Patty Marleau. So yeah, he'd have to play like an additional 2 years. So I don't know if I see that happening.
Yeah, me neither. He might have had the moment, though, of the night, the Leafs video with him in the background. That he might have had my favorite moment of the night, though. That was funny. Even Mitch Marner wearing a Bills thing in there got me distracted even from that. So great job by Marleau. But it had me thinking about records and, like, what's the next big record to be broken. And I don't know if there's another one on the horizon. The one I think about the most is definitely Ovechkin's goal record. And if you're wondering about the status of that, he had a very slow start to this season, but he's got 17 goals in his last 23 games. If he keeps on his current pace right now for the rest of the season, then he will be sitting at 738 goals scored for his career. And that is 136 behind 146 behind Wayne Gretzky for his record. So if he plays, I calculated it this morning, if he plays to age 40, he's got to average 32 goals a season. And he looks like he's not slowing down. He will at some point, no doubt. But I think that's the next one to be broken. I still think it's going to be broken, in part because Ovechkin has said he will hang around to break it. And I think you need that motivation. So I don't see anything else on the horizon, though. Do you disagree? Or are you still at, you think Ovechkin's going to get close?
Or I mean, like, it's yeah, there's no other record, I think, of the magnitude as, like, a games played or a goal scoring record. Yeah. I don't know how much I believe that he could do it. Like, I think he's going to pass he's one away from Marcel Dion from being top five all time, which is amazing. And then from there, he needs 10 to catch Brett Hall, which he'll easily do. Jágr, I could see him possibly passing him. Gordie Howe at 801. that's kind of the guy where I think he probably gets to him. But 894 against Gretzky, you know, the two shortened seasons last year, obviously not finishing the year due to COVID, and then playing just a 56-game season this year. You couple that with the fact that his rookie year was a lockout season, so he didn't even get to play at all his rookie season. So there's another 82 games gone. And then he had a half lockout season where they only played 48 games back in 2012-13. So, you know, through no fault of his own, he's kind of been robbed of a lot of games played, an opportunity for him to, you know, be a lot closer in that goal scoring record. And I just don't know if he's going to be able to do it. I just don't know if at like 38, 39, 40 years old, he's going to be able to still put up 30, 33 goals per season. You know what I mean? So that's the only thing for me. I think he can get close. And I guess if he gets close, he's the type of guy who will probably come back and just like that will be his goal. Like if he comes back at like league minimum for the last year of his career, because he's like 9 goals shy of that record.
Right.
Like I feel like he would do that just to break that record and to be known as the greatest goal scorer of all time, which I think he already is based on the fact that he's playing in an era where goals are so much harder to come by than Gretzky. But to cement yourself as that, because you quite literally have scored more goals than anybody else, would be special.
That's right. That's a good point, though. Like, he would come back if he's that close, and the Capitals would let him come back. It might be like a Marlowe situation. Marlowe, really, since he left Toronto, he's been okay, but he's not been Patrick Marlowe. This year, he's got 8 points.
Oh, and even his last year in Toronto wasn't great.
Right.
Like, there's a reason why the Leafs paid a first-round pick to get him off the books, right?
Right. So it helps to have, I guess what I'm saying is, it helps to have a franchise that I'm looking for a better way to phrase it than, you know, they owe you something. But a franchise that's willing to take you on as a bottom six player because of how much respect they have for you. And I feel like Ovechkin will have a similar thing with the Capitals, where Washington will just be like, you're Alex Ovechkin. If you want to come back for the league minimum, play on our third line, just stand on the power play and score 25 goals, then, like, sure, of course you can do that. I guess Ovechkin's a little different than Marlowe in that he's never going to be a fourth line guy because there's really no defense to his game like there is with Marlowe. But I still think that if he's that close, they would let him come back too. So Ovechkin, that's the next one to keep track of. Before we get to the Vancouver Canucks, let's jump to Montreal for a second. Carey Price leaves Monday's game against the Calgary Flames with an upper body injury. I have not seen how serious this injury is going to be. I think at this point there hasn't been an update at time of recording. Jake Allen came in and played really well in the final two periods. And Allen's actually, I mean, statistically, he's been their better goaltender this season. Price has been a lot better in the last couple of months, the last month or two. I want to say it's not as big a loss as it could be because they have Jake Allen and they brought him in before the season. But at the same time, when I think about Montreal and where their season is currently at, they are fourth place in the North Division, and they are going to be fourth place in the North Division. They're probably going to get faced with Toronto Maple Leafs. And I guess what I'm saying is the only way I could see Montreal beating the Leafs or making a deep playoff run is if Carey Price comes in and looks like a Vezina winner, because we know he has that in there somewhere. And if he's not in there, I like Jake Allen, but I don't think they're winning multiple rounds with Jake Allen as their goaltender.
No, I don't think so either. And I mean, Jake Allen was really good at the start of the season. Then he went through a lull where I don't think he had a win in like 7 or 8 games, maybe even up to 10 games. I feel like he went like 1-5-4 in like a 10 game span after a hot start to his season. So, you know, Jake Allen's been a little bit up and down this year. I don't think Montreal, regardless if they have Carey Price or not, are really going to do some damage in the playoffs. I think they're just awaiting a first round exit, regardless if they play Toronto, if they play Winnipeg, if they play Edmonton. I don't see them beating any three of those teams. And even if Carey Price is healthy, he hasn't been the Carey Price that we've known to come and love and consider one of the best goalies of all time. It's just, he's just not anymore. Like that's not what he is. And although he did kind of play really well and won them a series last year against Pittsburgh, playing extremely well, I just don't see it happening this year. So regardless of his health, I don't think Montreal is really stands a chance at having any type of success this season.
All right. Well, we will stick in the North Division when we come back. The Vancouver Canucks are back on the ice. We will talk about what brought that to light, that they were back, the last week that's been with Vancouver. And Alex Edler, who has been suspended. We'll go through that hit as well. When we come back here on the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano.
RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
This episode of the Locked On Sabres podcast is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. This collection features high quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and fairly priced, so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com.
A word for Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but you got the NBA, college hoops, the NHL, all in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. For these Sabre games, you could bet on the exact amount of which either the Sabres or their opponent will win by. So if you think the Sabres are going to win by exactly two, you can find odds for the Sabres winning by exactly two. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. The best way to place your bets, and it is free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline.ag is the site. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Remember to use the promo code Locked On.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Leafs and Mike DiStefano. I'm from Locked On Sabres. Mike is from Locked On Leafs. I guess I could be from Locked On Leafs at this point. I'm already in off-season mode, and Mike's, I'm sure you're preparing for the playoffs. Even though we're still 11 games away. How about the Vancouver Canucks, though? They are back on the ice. They had an incredible performance in their return to the ice. A lot of people giving them a ton of credit for playing that way, just coming back off of their COVID shutdown. Before we get to Alex Edler, what did you make of the last week? JT Miller's comments, the Friday game originally being scheduled and then being put off. What did you make of the Canucks' way of handling this and the way the NHL handled it?
I thought the Canucks handled it well. I mean, they didn't make that massive of an uproar. I mean, he made a couple comments saying that he felt that it wasn't right for them to be playing in the game. And then the NHLPA kind of took that to the league and they decided, all right, well, we'll push it back a couple more days and give you guys a couple more, another practice, an additional skate, and maybe you'll be able to have your legs under them. Like, apparently after they had that one practice, they were just like gas, just sucking wind the entire time. They didn't have any legs, nothing. So that game Friday would have been atrocious, I'm thinking, based on what they were telling us, because they even had a couple more days and a couple more practices to get their legs under them, and they still were gassed when they played the Leafs on Sunday. So I'm glad that the league ended up pushing it back. I don't think that, like, there was some people saying they shouldn't even have to play at all the rest of the season. I think that's a little much, a little extra. I think we saw the way that they performed on Sunday, whether maybe that was just, you know, kind of
adrenaline
rush, perhaps.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Perhaps that's what it was. But they definitely looked tired, don't get me wrong, but they look like a team that can play. Right. And to like to get, I guess, from a business perspective, to cancel the rest of their games would be like just very detrimental to the way to the season, both on ice and off the ice from a money perspective. So I thought that was a little much for people to be saying that. And, you know, they got back in, they played really well. And they played OK. Like Toronto should have won that game. Toronto should have won that game realistically, like 8-0, based on if you actually watch the game. But, you know, Braden Holtby was fantastic in that one. And like you said, I think adrenaline took over and, you know, they were able to sneak out a gutsy win in overtime against a really good Leafs team. And the question I have for you, Joe, is, am I crazy? Am I crazy for thinking that, like, this could potentially make Vancouver go on a run? Like I
ooh,
you know, like when St. Louis a couple years ago went on that big run and they were like last place. For some reason I look at Vancouver and I'm like, could they be like that next team and just, you know, something happens and like, it's maybe it's just because it's COVID and I feel like something weird is going to happen, but how weird would it be if Vancouver, a team that decimated by COVID, everyone thought they're out of it, all of a sudden go on a big run after a big win, an inspiring win against Toronto coming out of their break. And all of a sudden now you look at them and they are 10 points back of Montreal, but they have 5 games in hand. So if they can win all 5 of those games, which tall task, obviously, they're tied with Montreal and they have, I think, at least one game, maybe even 2 games with Montreal for a chance to even shrink that and get it back. So I don't know if Vancouver's completely out of it. It is a very small chance that they can get back into it and get a playoff spot. But I like, just that gutsy win last night has me kind of feeling like maybe there's something in Vancouver and they could do something magical here.
My problem with the math is there. And actually, I'm looking at their schedule now. They don't have any games left against Montreal, but they do have 4 games left against Ottawa, and they have 4 games left against Calgary. So the 2 teams at the bottom of the division are, I mean, that's how many of your games? It's half your games left. So the math is there. The schedule is there. So that's why I won't completely rule it out. I just don't like their roster enough. You know, they give up so many scoring chances that if this had been, I don't even know. I think if their blue line was better, then maybe I would give them a better chance. But I'm not seeing it because I don't think those games in the middle against Edmonton, and they've got one more series against Toronto, and then they've got a series against Winnipeg. Like, I think they're going to have trouble in that middle stretch of their season between the Ottawa and Calgary games. And that's where I think they'll fall short of making up those games in hand. Because like you said, to be in the race, they probably got to win 5 of the, they've got to win 4 of the 5 games in hand they have on Montreal to even have a shot, I think. So I'm going to say no, but I also think it's more likely than, you know, Calgary finding their way back into this race. So I'll say that.
It gets a little difficult too now, because for the next couple games, you're without Alex Edler, who's their kind of rock on that blue line, who has a 2-game suspension after his hit on Hyman the other day, a knee-on-knee collision. And quickly, I just want to get your, because I don't know.
What was your thought on the hit? Did you think it was that bad?
No, I did not think it was suspendable. Like, I thought, you know, okay, you got a game misconduct. Okay, I guess I can live with that. But the fact that that got suspended 2 games, to me, just, like, didn't make sense. I've seen way more lethal plays only get like a $5,000 fine, let alone suspensions. Yeah. The Department of Player Safety, the consistency just doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand how they make some of these rules. And I don't know, maybe it's because Hyman got injured that they're like, well, we got to give him something. We don't want him to play the next game because what if they go after him and the game gets away from him because they injured one of their star players, one of their heart and soul guys. So we'll at least get him out for that game. But then to suspend him for an additional game after, it just didn't make sense.
Maybe I was too meticulous with it, but I watched that play in slow motion like a bunch of times. I'm actually doing it again right now to make sure that I remember it right. And I think you're right. I think what happened is Hyman got injured. They wanted to defuse the situation, so they gave him the suspension. But does that mean what Edler did was dirty or even necessarily wrong? Because if you watch the hit, when Edler commits to making contact, Hyman is headed for, he's going to make shoulder-to-shoulder contact. And Hyman stops like right before he gets to Edler, and he tries to cut to the left. So Edler actually doesn't really move his knee. His knee is just kind of stagnant. It just stays where he was already at going in to make contact. And Hyman, I don't want to say he's the one who initiates the knee on knee because he is trying to get out of the way. That's what he's trying to do, avoid all contact. But I think it's just a fast play that it was just a collision. You know, it was just a random collision that happened to injure Hyman. It could have injured Edler to me just as bad.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. Again, I don't think it was Edler's intention at all to hit his knee. And that's what I think it should all be about. I think, what's the guy's intention? If you have good reason to believe that he didn't mean to hit him, and Edler's not a dirty player. I don't think he's a repeat offender. I don't think. I know he's been around a while. But no. I would have let him go without anything here.
Yeah, I totally agree with those points. And like you're hit the nail right on the head there. Like, this wasn't an egregious act. This was not... he didn't mean to do it. He wasn't trying to do it. It wasn't purposeful. And I think for those reasons, you kind of got to take that into account that, you know, this was just a happenstance. I mean, how many times does this play happen in a game where a player chips a puck past a defender and he just tries to ease him up by getting a piece of him so that he doesn't chip it right past and zoom past him on a breakaway? Like, this happens a lot. And this just had a different result than usual, right?
That's like, right.
Nine times out of ten, this play doesn't occur with an injury, because this happens all the time in games.
That's right. Did you see McDavid last night against Montreal with, I think it was Josh Anderson, where he's trying to jump to get out of the way? And then they make contact. In fact, I think, I want to make sure it's Anderson, 24. I'm watching it right now and I can't tell. I forget. That might be Deneau, actually.
No, that's Deneau. Phil Deneau.
Deneau. So... McDavid tries to pull up, and Deneau's kind of, to me, like doing the same thing Edler is. He's going in for shoulder to shoulder contact, and McDavid pulls up and he's trying to get out of the way, and their knees actually do collide. The problem is they were both going in the same direction, so McDavid just flies into the wall and actually goes skate first in the wall. It's a really scary hit. Luckily he didn't get injured, but like, to me, like, isn't that the same play? Like, it's the same play. It's a guy trying to make shoulder to shoulder contact. The guy that he's going to hit pulls up. And again, that's no fault of the guy being hit. He's trying to avoid contact, but it's just kind of a coincidence. So
I think also the fact that Edler was at the end of a 3-minute shift for someone who hasn't played hockey in 25 days. Yeah. Like, it's just even makes that play so much harder for him to make. Right. So it's just, there's a lot that went into it. And I don't know. I think a 2-game suspension was just a little much for me. Like, if you wanted to do one game just to defuse the situation and make sure that there's no retaliation between the two tonight, then that would have made a little bit of sense, I think, just for that reason alone. But then to add that extra game after this team already is missing a lot of their pieces, a lot of players, and they're already playing like shorthanded. They're at 50% of what they usually are, like, coming off of this COVID. And now to take away your best blue liner, your kind of rock on your blue line, one of your captains for 2 games, it's another tough blow to the Canucks who've had a rough few weeks.
And it is a tough blow for Toronto too. Hyman being out,
yeah.
Was he playing top line? Because I know I think I saw Galchenyuk is back up there, or was he already there?
No, this guy plays wherever the heck you want. Like, Hyman is truly like. a real pro. Like, he does whatever you want. You want him on the first line, second line, third line. He's honestly like Mr. Fix-It. If they're not scoring on the first line, they'll toss Hyman on there. If Nylander and Tavares aren't scoring, they say, all right, go down to the second line, get them going. Oh, that third, we're not getting any production from the bottom six. Okay, we'll shove Hyman on the third line. Like, yeah. He's Mr. Fix-It. He's honestly super important to this team. He kills penalties. So this is a tough injury for the Leafs, and not so much because, you know, they're going to lose, but, you know, not having him 100% now going into the playoffs, and seemingly won't be 100% the rest of the way. Like, even when he comes back, he's not going to be 100%. And, you know, could that hinder his the impact that he can have on this, on the ice? You know, hopefully it doesn't, but there's a good chance that it will at some point, right? Like, when you're playing hurt, it's, you know, you can't obviously give it your all. So in that sense, it's definitely going to hurt the Leafs. The saving grace, though, is that they do have a player returning on Saturday. Nick Foligno is expected to make his debut. So they will have a guy who they can kind of shove back into that top six role and kind of play a similar, you know, defensive-minded game that Hyman plays. And hopefully that kind of mitigates the absence of Hyman there.
Yep. Hyman, by the way, kind of a sneaky, underrated finisher in the NHL. Since he entered the league, I saw the stats somewhere. I'm going to pull it up again. But I know he 12.2% shot percentage since he entered the NHL. And that is, like, that's on par. I'm looking at it right now. Same shot percentage since he entered the league is Vladimir Tarasenko, Patrick Kane, Nikolai Ehlers, Jonathan Toews, Kevin Hayes. I mean, he's normally not mentioned in the same breath as those guys. And I'm sure his numbers are probably a little inflated by the guys that he plays with, but he has been a great finisher, like scoring goals since he entered the league.
But when you look at it, like all of his points pretty well, except for, I think I looked at this up yesterday, all but five of his points are coming at even strength at 5-on-5. Like, right. Only five of his points are coming on the power play. And I think he only has like a couple power play goals. So the majority of his production is coming at 5-on-5, which is something that you always love to see. So when you're looking at like stats and you look at it, it's like, okay, sure, maybe he doesn't have the, you know, 21 goals that Nikolai Ehlers has, but, or the 20 goals that he has, but they have the same amount of even strength goals. And that's pretty impressive to me, when you think about the season that Ehlers is having. You know, Zach Hyman is having an insanely impressive season. And, you know, the fact that people say maybe they're inflated because he's playing with Matthews and Marner. He's spent a lot of time off of that line as well, which is also very impressive that, you know, he goes down to the second line, keeps contributing, goes to the third line. All of a sudden you're getting production from your bottom six now. And you know, he's just been insanely consistent no matter where he plays. Like, he's a Swiss Army knife for this team. He's a pending UFA too, so there's a lot of contract discussion going on with Hyman right now. There's a lot of dispute too about what he is worth to the team, because all this of what I'm saying right now, you know, it makes him seem like he's the straw that stirs the drink and he's super important to this club, which he is, but there's not a lot of money available for the Leafs this offseason, and there's a big section of Leafs Nation that are worried that he could walk because of what he might be worth this summer. So I'm curious, as an outsider for the Buffalo Sabres, who would probably love a guy like Zach Hyman, what would you consider spending for this free agent? Like, I'm curious what, you know, opposing teams and opposing clubs out of market think about his value.
So specifically for the Sabres, I'm not sure what he would be worth. Is not somewhere I would go near, because I just don't think the Sabres are going to be trying to, I think they're going to be trying to rebuild next year, just to say it. I think they're going young. I think this year with Granato as their head coach, and since Ralph Kruger was fired, they've kind of been empowering the young guys, and they've just been throwing the 22, 21, 20-year-olds out there and just seeing what happens, and it's gone great. So that's not meant as a criticism of Hyman, because I think, let's instead put myself as a GM of who? Colorado. For instance, Colorado's got cap space still, which, I mean, it's because of that MacKinnon contract. But if I'm Colorado and I've got space and I'm looking at Zach Hyman and I can put him in my top six, or like you're saying, like Swiss Army knife, he's got to play my third line. I'm willing to pay that guy, I think, $4 million a year. Is that a crazy contract? Ooh, I think on a winning team.
That's funny.
What's that?
That seems extremely low.
You think that's low for Hyman? Okay.
I mean, that's what I mean. Like up here, we're thinking like this guy's going to be worth like $5.5 million. Like, and potentially some team may blow their brains out to bring him in at $6 million just because he's a guy who can complement your stars and bring out the best in them. Not even your stars, just anyone who plays with. He seems to bring out the best in them. Yep. And like, I look at a team like Edmonton and how much they could utilize a guy like Zach Hyman, and like, would they pay $6 million a year to bring him onto that team to create offense? Like, he's not just the two-way grinder that he came into the league as that he used to be. Like, this guy is legitimately an all-around player. Like, he's a finisher. Like you said, he's got an extremely high shooting percentage. He's been very consistent, and he's been kind of the driver. Obviously, he's not the driver when he's in the top six, but he can drive a line and be productive when he's the best player on the line. So it's not even like he needs to be surrounded by talent to produce. He can create production on his own. And when you surround him with talent who he just goes into the corner and gives the puck to, it allows them to produce even more. So like I said, we're thinking it's probably going to cost the Leafs at least $5 million to keep this guy. And I have a sneaky suspicion that perhaps there'd be a team out there willing to overpay him, whether or not he wants to stick around in Toronto. He is a local boy, and that'll be a nice and take a nice hometown discount, perhaps. But I think it starts with a five, in my opinion.
Well, I'm glad we had this talk then, because his value is definitely higher than where I was thinking. So that would be interesting.
Like $4 million. Does that sound too high? I'm like, dude,
I was thinking four might even have been on the high side. So no, this is good. This is good to kind of rethink his value. I'm going to watch more of the Leafs, of course, once it comes playoff time too. So I might have arrived at that point anyway.
Yeah,
so
we'll revisit this in the playoffs. And when you got your eyes on the Maple Leafs on a nightly basis and you see what he does out on the ice, you'll say, wow, I want that guy on my team. Like, that is somebody I really want on my team. Mm-hmm.
Well, playoffs are coming. They're not too far away. So we will continue to preview the playoffs as the weeks progress and these playoff races start to wrap up, as they've already kind of started to do around the league. So that's going to do it for us on today's podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Sneaky Joe Sports. Mike is at Mickey_Canuck. And we will talk to you next Tuesday here on the Locked On NHL Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.